And this trend towards humanizing your pet, effectively treating it like a member of the family, has swept the world. We've got a dog park on this side of a fence.
Yeah.
Then we've got a corridor, and we've got a dog park on that side.
So what's actually the classroom? What are you guys learning or teaching?
Number one, we have waiting lists here. And that's a bit of a worry for us, believe it or not. You know, we love being full. We're not running a charity, it's a business.
Training is not about me training your dog. Training is about me teaching you how to be in a relationship with your dog, how to communicate with your dog.
We do have a lot of owners who are very specific about how they want the dog to be treated in this home-from-home environment.
What would be the cost to build something like this?
Of course, every doggy hotel needs a spa, and there's lots of things happening right now.
Do you feel this is a job or this is pure joy and happiness?
Can be a business, but can also be a deep, deep, deep passion.
Hello, dear friends, colleagues, and entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode up number 13. Today I'm happy, I'm always happy, but today especially happy, warm and love in my heart, because we're gonna cover episode in the largest dog park, not in Dubai, not in UAE, largest in the world. Interesting fact that UAE dog owners, dog families spend around 1,000 dirhams a month on a dog, on their loved children. Let me know, what do you think? 1,000 dirhams is a lot, or definitely you're spending more than that? Let me know in the comments, how do you feel? So today we're gonna visit Paul. He's a co-founder of My Second Home, the dog park. And we're gonna talk about the business, about the dog, and about the industry itself. Oh, by the way, there is another interesting trend happening by the name is humanization. I find out on the research that families treating their dogs more and more like their kids, like a humans. And what does it mean for the market? It means more attention, more investment, more love. Well, definitely there is demand, and these guys fulfilling the supply. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Evan.
Catching you while you're busy.
Yeah, thank you. It's nice to see you.
Thanks for having me. Well, I start with two questions.
Okay.
So what is a second home? And another question, is it a business or just absolutely pure enjoy and happiness?
I have always hoped that I could be in business and also do something that I absolutely love. And I think we've really nailed it with this place. You're here with me today on a busy Friday morning at the start of a crazy weekend. I think that whole idea of being able to combine a passion for animal husbandry with business is fantastic. And it's enabled us to create what we think is a true home-from-home experience. And that's where the name came from. We wanted to make sure that the dogs of Dubai are as happy when they're away from their main home as they are when they're in their second home. And I think that that boils down to a number of different things. It boils down to some absolutely sensational people that we're privileged to work with. It boils down to a really deep understanding of what dogs really need to be happy, socialized, enriched. And it boils down to one particular guy, I think.
Yeah.
Our amazing and enigmatic general manager, Sean Parker. And no self-respected tour of the place would be complete without meeting him. So I'm guessing without further ado, we should probably go and find out exactly how this place ticks.
Yeah, let's do. Let's check it out.
Yeah, all right. We're in the main reception area here. This is the central entry point for the dogs that come in with their owners, through into the main car park, through into the main reception, which is where they're effectively checked in, as you would be checked into any self-respecting hotel anywhere. And from here, they would then go either into daycare, a handler would come and collect them, just like taking the kids to daycare, or alternatively, they would be checked in for boarding. And we have roughly 200 dogs a day in daycare, and can accommodate about another 150.
My mother works in the kindergarten back at home. I'm from Lithuania. So it looks similar, you know, you arrive in the kindergarten as well, there's a reception, there's a nice environment, a lot of, you know, pictures, colorful.
No, it is. And it has to be, it's kind of a sensory bombardment when you come in here. As you say, lots of color, lots of energy. I mean, I think that you used the analogy of the school.
Yeah.
And I think that when we talk to Sean, we're going to hear very much how passionate he is about creating that classroom environment, which can so cleverly be replicated when you've got the right mindset, the right attitude, and most of all, the amount of space that we've got here to be able to deliver that. So maybe we should hear from Sean.
Yeah, let's do that. A lot of dogs, a lot of balls.
Everybody's having a great time. Good morning, good morning.
Evan.
How's it going?
All good.
All right, let me take you a little tour of the facilities and explain what we're doing and what's going on and what everything is all about. I like to think of it like a school, and I'm sure Paul's already explained this to you. We've got our classrooms and we've got our play areas.
Okay.
And we're in a play area right now. But we also have a larger play area over on that side for the bigger dogs. And one of the dogs just went to the bathroom. Okay, so what we're in right now are the active areas of the park. This is where all the activities take place. The running, the playing, the sniffing, the socializing, and the swimming.
The fun stuff.
This is the fun stuff. But I want to do is just walk and talk, because we've got lots to see, lots to have a look at, and lots part of the facility to get through. A really important part of the facility is for us to be able to offer outdoor and indoor activities for the dogs. So even in the Dubai summer, we want to be able to have short times where the dogs can come out, relieve themselves, have a little bathroom break, and then come in and play in the air-conditioned environment.
Yeah.
This is one of our smaller areas dedicated to smaller dogs. We've got a pool, a run-in and run-out pool that the little dogs can go in and out of and have a really good time. And then probably the most important part of the facility is the toilet area.
Okay.
So let's take a look at that.
So when they go for the pool time, is it dedicated time or whenever they feel? How does it work?
Okay, that's a great question, because we actually have a very tight schedule of events that takes place during the day.
Mm-hmm.
We've got our dogs doing activities and rest in cycles throughout the day. We want them to have a nice balance of activity and rest. So before an activity, before we bring the dogs into the dog park to play, we always come into the shaded area for a quick toilet stop.
So you said the park is cleaned with smart robots during the night?
Yes.
So this area is well cleaned by?
Everything gets disinfected, everything gets cleaned. And the sand is a really useful substrate to have, because it's easy to keep clean, it's easy to keep disinfected.
All
of our access points lead out to here for the dogs to be able to go to the toilet. So we have an area from daycare, which is up over there, which I'll show you later, that comes out into the sand area. And then our boarding rooms also come out into the sand area, so that the dogs that are staying overnight can also come and have a little comfort stop whenever they need
to. Each room has its own entrance to the washroom.
Absolutely. So let's go through here and we can go into boarding. So we're now in our hotel, and the hotel at the moment is being cleaned. So just excuse the activities going on.
Okay.
We've got the guys busy cleaning, but we have got these amazing rooms for the dogs that are used for overnight only. The dogs are only coming to their rooms for having their food, to eat breakfast, to have dinner, and also then to sleep. Each room is furnished according to the individual dogs. And so the owners of those dogs have then furnished their rooms. Every single room has got a camera. So you can download an app onto your phone and you can see your dog throughout the night while it's in its room. So the dogs can, their dog owners can then, their parents can just log into the app, download that app onto their phone, obviously, and then see their dog in the room in real time, in live time. And then during the day, the dogs are then sent through to our daycare facility, what I call the classroom area. So if you think of it like there's an area of classrooms and then there's an area of play areas, like a school. But whereas our classrooms are more for settling down, resting, low impact play, the dogs can socialize with each other. They do little activities in the daycare area where they sniff and do some small enrichment activities with their handlers.
So, sorry, question. So, for example, all these rooms are empty now.
Yes.
Where are the dogs?
The dogs are in daycare. They're in school.
Okay.
Yeah.
It belongs, like basically we see the names and everything, yes. But they're not staying here.
They are here, but they're not in their room. They're out there or they're in our daycare facility.
Which is nice.
That group of dogs right now is doing an activity. So that's one of the cyclic activities that's taking place. That classroom is out right now having a good old time. Now, if you look at the actual room, we have on the doors, we have a record of everything that the dog is going to be doing here while it's at my second home. It's got the feeding records, how much the dogs are eating. It's got medication, if they're on medication. It's got their weight records, how much they weigh when they come in. Mm. How much do they weigh every week thereafter, so that we can track their eating, their weights, that the dogs don't go home losing weight. They can go home at the same weight that they came in.
Okay.
And that we can keep a track on all of that. We even have a poo gallery of shame on our phones where we photograph the dog's feces, so that we can track healthy versus when things are not looking so good. And we then have a veterinarian that we can have look at the poo samples to determine if the dog needs any kind of assistance or not. So, yeah, so the rooms are different sizes for different dogs. We've got our standard rooms for small dogs, deluxe rooms for slightly larger dogs, royal rooms for dogs like retrievers and German shepherds, and then we have our presidential rooms. And these are for multiple dog families. So I've got five dogs. They can all spend time in a presidential room together. And
Can a small dog go to presidential room?
A small dog can go to the presidential room. We often have clients saying to us, hey, my dog needs to go to a presidential.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, fine. Some owners will ask for different things in the room. And this particular dog, Sandy, is relocating. And part of a relocation is that the dog gets to be comfortable in a crate, because it's going to spend a lot of time on a crate as it goes on the plane and gets traveled. This one is going to the USA.
It looks so massive.
So this big crate is in the room. Sandy is a big dog. Sandy's a Vizsla. And Sandy is sleeping in his crate at night. So he can get used to the idea of what is the crate all about. And when he goes on the plane, he'll be comfortable. It'll be a safe place for him. So he'll be less stressed on travel. And we even have this presidential over here. And this one has a TV as well for the dogs.
I can tell you for sure, this room is a little bit bigger than my room in London that I was living.
Goodness.
Yeah. So definitely presidential.
Before we go into the actual park, I'm just going to show you the kitchen. So we can have a little look at our kitchen.
Mm.
What we're in right now is a check-in lounge. So this is where all of the belongings come for our kennel manager, Sue, to check the dogs in. So their beds and their report cards are all going to then be put into the rooms so that they can be prepared and the dogs can go into their rooms this evening.
So each dog comes with their own stuff so they can get used to it.
Yes. So this is all their own stuff. We don't provide anything for the room because we don't want the dogs to feel uncomfortable with the smell of another dog. So we want them to have their own things in their room.
I love that. A lunchtime nap? Yes.
Yeah. So there's special instructions for every single dog. And this particular dog gets a lunchtime nap. Just behind you, out of interest, behind us over here, we're having an assessment done at the moment. So a dog has come in to join our family. And Sue's just completed the assessment. And the dog is now going through to the daycare environment to learn how to interact and balance itself in the group of dogs. So the assessment's really important. We need to make sure that the dogs coming into my second home are able to be confident and interact with the environment. It's not always about interacting with other dogs, but they have to be comfortable with other dogs. They need to be able to enjoy the environment, get something out of the environment.
Mm-hmm. Is there, I don't know, percentage of rejection or not acceptance?
Unfortunately, we do have dogs that don't get accepted immediately. And we then offer them a package whereby they can learn how to be in the environment, starting off by being with their owners, because the owner will often give the dog a little bit of confidence. Mm. So if the owner is around for the process, the dog can then learn and get a history of positive experiences with us in the park, that when we wean the owner out of the equation, the dog is still happy to be here.
Okay.
But there are, unfortunately, dogs that, for whatever reason, they just don't want to be in this kind of environment. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay, but we can't have them continue to be with us because these dogs then disrupt the balance and the harmony in our classrooms, in the groups, and that can then cause problems that we don't want to impose on the other
you're
dogs.
Controlling that.
So we want to make sure that the dogs are having a good
time.
Is
there a number, let's say, out of 10 dogs?
I would say out of 10 dogs, maybe 1 out of 10 might not pass. Mm. Maybe 2 or 3 out of 10 will not pass the initial assessment.
Then you put on
the
training.
And then we do the process with them, and
I'd say of those dogs, most of them will end up passing after we've done the process and there's been consistency and commitment from the owner.
And you mentioned something about the kitchen.
Right, kitchen.
Why do you need a kitchen?
Very big kitchen. We have to obviously make sure that the dogs have an area where their food can be prepared, the dishes can be washed. So we have a lot going on in the kitchen. We have freezers for raw food and for home-cooked meals. We've got containers for all the dry meals that the dogs might be getting. And each dog has a different meal.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of different foods that go into the kitchen. We can take a walk inside, yeah.
I see massive boards. It looks like KPI boards in the big corporate company.
So these boards are really important boards for knowing what's going on and what dogs are here and what they're eating and what their special needs are. So each line represents a room in the facility. Mm. And then each line then has got the dog's name, what food they're eating, if they're on any kind of medication, how much they're eating, when they're eating, their frequency of food, when they're checking in and when they're checking out. All right, let's take a nice walk into the park now. We're going to show you the daycare area, or the classrooms, what I call the classrooms. Mm-hmm. We're going to walk through the dogs to actually go outside and see another one of our outside play areas, which is beautiful. It's wonderful. If we walk down this corridor, what you'll notice is you'll notice that we've got safe areas. So if you look, we've got a dog park on this side of a fence.
Yeah.
Then we've got a corridor, and we've got a dog park on that side. Very important when you are interacting with different groups of dogs that they don't have direct access to each other. We don't want them to be fighting at a fence. So we can have dogs on one side of the corridor and dogs on the other side of the corridor playing with each other.
Yeah, they can't sniff each other.
So,
did you guys build from the beginning like this, or it evolved during that time?
So this has been a work in progress. You know, we've been around for 8 years.
Yeah.
And in 8 years, we've seen what works and what doesn't work. And what's going to happen now, actually, is the guys are going to let the dogs go for a little swims. Part of being at school is that we have fun. And and swim activities are very important.
I see.
Especially with dogs that have got hip problems, to have a swim during the day.
Can we go inside?
You can go inside, absolutely. Let's just walk through here. If the dogs come to you, don't worry.
Yeah, okay. So it is a pool party.
It's a pool party, yeah.
You all wet, of course. Oh, that's nice.
So unless you have your own private pool,
yeah,
there's no option really for dogs to swim. And as you can see, this is a group of dogs that loves to swim. This is a group of retrievers and Labradors. And we even sometimes find the Huskies going in the water.
So what do you mean? The Huskies usually not enjoying the water that much?
I think they prefer snow. We have snow parties for the dogs. We bring in mountains and mountains of ice, of crushed ice.
Yeah.
And we let the dogs play in the ice. What I'm going to do now, and the dogs will probably go out with us, it's going to be just for 5 minutes that we'll let the dogs run outside. And I know they're probably going to run outside because they love to go outside. We're going to just have a little look at the outside dog park. There's another pool out there, so there's a chance that the dogs might just run to that pool.
Okay.
Don't get knocked over.
Yeah.
And as you can see, the dogs...
Yep.
The dogs love to come outside as well.
Outside time. Woo! So is this the best job?
I don't think you can get a better job.
Huh?
I don't think you can get anything better than this.
Yeah.
We have, of course, a lovely row of trees and shade. So even during the day, if we want to bring the dogs out for 5 minutes, they can come on out. They've got some shade. They've got a pool to swim in. Happy dogs. Happy, happy dogs. And that's what it's really all about. It's about giving the dogs an opportunity to fully engage their brains, fully engage their physical activities, and to have an amazing day of brain engagement and physical engagement, so that when they go home in the evenings, they're chilled, they're relaxed and calm. So the indoor park is for really limiting us during the summer months with the air conditioning. We can play in the indoor park. And then this outdoor park is a great space for the dogs to enjoy during the winter months.
Yeah.
And they do enjoy it during the summer months as well, in the early mornings and the late afternoons.
Well, we see that.
And then also, you know, 5 minutes here and there if they're feeling inclined to have a quick run around outside. All right, we'll head back inside and we're going to bring the dogs. Probably the dogs are going to just come piling in with us.
Yeah.
So wherever the team is, the dogs are going to follow the team. They love their handlers. The handlers are with them the whole day. They're never left alone. So they're always with somebody. They're always with their teachers.
I'm really surprised. So dog has a balls and they have a pool and they're following us.
Oh, yes, because they love us. And, you know, this is something that's really interesting, is that a lot of people think that the dogs would only ever want to be in a space where they're having fun and playing with balls and things like that and being in a nice big old park. But they also just love to go into their classrooms as well. So you can see all the dogs have come in.
Yeah.
And now what's going to happen is that, and you'll see this, it's quite amazing. We're going to just open the gate over there, and the dogs will follow the handlers into daycare. All right, guys, you can just take the dogs back. They'll follow you as you go.
So now we're going to the classroom?
They're
going
to go to the classrooms. So Kiko is waiting for them. The door to the classrooms is opened. You can see caution, dogs
are
playing.
Can we go as well?
We're not going to follow them into the actual classrooms because there are other dogs that are resting.
Yeah.
But there they go. All right, guys, you can follow me into this space.
So what actually is a classroom? What are you guys learning or teaching?
I'll show you. All right, Delilah, you're going to go inside as well. Bye, girl.
Say bye to Daddy.
Delilah.
All right, so these are the classrooms, okay? And the reason we don't go in is because we've got 7 groups of dogs in there that know the handlers, and they are quite territorial of their classrooms. Mm. They're very protective over their spaces. So if we go in, the dogs are going to really come rushing up towards us, and then we're going to create some disharmony in the group.
So you try not to allow anyone?
We don't allow anybody in there except their teachers and the people that they know. Because if somebody goes in there that they don't know, it can cause a disruption, which can then get a lot of excitement going, especially if dogs are resting. Then they can start standing on each other, and we don't want dogs to get injured or nip each other because they don't understand now why this person they don't know is in their environment. We've got 7 classrooms, and each classroom is a different group of dogs.
Mm.
So we've got from puppies that are, let's say, between 4 and 8 months old in one group. Then we've got little dogs that are Pomeranians and Maltese and Chihuahuas, and they're in a group. And then we've got graduation groups. So we've got adolescents or young dogs that are around 8 months to 2 years of age. They really get together and they vibe with each other. And it's normally the larger breeds like Golden Retrievers, Huskies, Vizslas, Great Danes, bigger breeds, German Shepherds. Then we've got an older group of dogs, sort of the retired group of dogs that aren't interested in all the young play and all the craziness.
Not that active.
They want to be a little bit less active. And then we've got a group that is specifically for the mixers. They understand each other. They have the same mindset. So the mixers, the Arabian mixers, the typical street dogs that you'd find here in Dubai, we have a group dedicated just for them. They love being with each other. They understand how they play. They understand each other's body language. A little bit more nippy, a little bit more barky than say, the Golden Retrievers and the Huskies. Mm-hmm. So they really understand each other, and they can be in one group together. And then we've got a group of bulldogs and French bulldogs and a group of beagles and spaniels. So each group has been clearly thought out. Every now and again, though, we'll have a dog that has an identity crisis. The dog's going to be like, I'm in the beagle and spaniel group and I'm a beagle, but I think I'm a golden retriever. So can I be in the golden retriever group? And there are these exceptions to the rule.
So, and somebody from your team feel that?
We can actually see when the dog is not fitting in the group. Sometimes that dog needs to come down a group size or go up a group size to find the perfect fit for that particular dog.
So do you guys have like learning programs?
We have different training programs that we do. We have group classes where dogs can come and do group classes together. We don't like the idea of in-house training or boarding a dog and training, because for me personally, training is not about me training your dog. Training is about me teaching you how to be in a relationship with your dog, how to communicate with your dog. So I can train anybody's dog to do whatever I want it to, but when that person is then trying to achieve the results at home, unless they've got the skills and the understanding, they're not going to really know what to do with their dog. So for me, when it comes to training and training programs, I like to mentor the owner, mentor the human, and teach the human how to interact, communicate. It's two-way communication. reading what and understanding what your dog is communicating, and then, of course, for your dog to understand what you're trying to communicate to your dog.
Yeah.
So that's more about what the training is about here. We work hands-on with the owners when it comes to training. Mm.
Sean, I did a little research about you, and I found a really nice sentence. Striving to educate myself on the latest techniques in positive reinforcement, choice-based, and force-free training.
And this is really important. As we are stepping away from the old school ways of training, the old school ways of training were dominance-based, were alpha-based. We've learned so much about training since those days.
Yeah.
We've now learned that you can take all those structures that you thought existed and throw them away. And we go into a communicative style of training. It's about, firstly, understanding what is your dog trying to communicate with you? And then what is it that you would like to communicate with your dog? And how do we find a language that we can both speak? And this language is then reward and reinforce certain words and certain phrases, and also reinforce a word like good or yes, so that dogs can understand when they're doing the right thing in the moment that they're doing the right thing. The other important thing to remember is that any organism, when you take choice and control away from it, mm-hmm. including humans, when you take choice and control away from an animal, the same thing happens. You get anxiety and you can get frustration. And both anxiety and frustration can lead to a point whereby you have a dog that will start exhibiting behavior that you don't want to see, or aggression. So our training techniques are very much based on maintaining choice and control in the environment for the dog so that we can always give it options and choices to choose. It's not about free choice of anything.
Not to force a specific way,
yeah? It's about, well, you can do this or you can do that. And both of these things will give you a positive outcome. It's also about making sure that we don't communicate or try and correct a dog when we perceive it is wrong. Because actually, a lot of what we see is normal behavior for a dog. And then we start to punish dogs because we think that it shouldn't be barking or it shouldn't be growling or it shouldn't be showing its teeth. When in actual fact, that is a normal communication for dogs and should not be punished. And I say this because it's so important to understand that our dogs communicate all the time.
Yeah.
And if we punish them for communicating and we punish them for showing us that they're uncomfortable, a snarl or a growl or showing their teeth, and we punish them for that, then the next thing they'll do is they'll start to hide all of those things and then just bite. And you'll wonder, where did that come from? There was no warning. Well, because you've punished all the warning signs. So we don't like to do that. We like to make sure that the dogs have always got the opportunity to show us whatever behavior they want to, but we guide them in the responses that we would like to have them give us.
Yeah.
All right, so we've come upstairs into our spa area. Of course, every doggy hotel needs a spa, and there's lots of things happening right now. We've got a spa treatment going on over here, and one of the dogs is getting a nice bubble bath and ensuring that they can go home smelling fresh for their owners.
So the dog will leave facilities, and now you do the washing, the spa
treatments? Yes, so we do all sorts of grooming and spa treatments for the dogs, from washes to trims to nails to ears and everything in between.
Yeah.
And then we have another pup over there that is getting dried.
Hello. You enjoying it?
Hi.
It looks like.
Yes, I'm loving it. I love it when he just touches me on my tail.
Yes.
So this is the spa. And actually, we have a little area for cats as well up here. Because cats are not as social as dogs, we need to ensure that we don't have all the cats out at the same time. Mm-hmm. So we have play areas where the cats can come and play in. And then we've got their rooms or their suites where they can chill. And it's all done individually, so the cats don't all just climb into each other. So each room has got its own ensuite toilet. So how it works is that the room has got, if you look here, if this is a room, you've got different areas for the cats to play and hide. And then there's a little gap down there with its own ventilation, and each room has got its own ventilation, mm-hmm. Inflow and outflow. And then the little toilet area, which can be accessed, is down here, so that the cat can go down into the bottom, go to the bathroom privately, and each cat's got their own special toilet space.
Do their own thing.
Yeah. And who's in residence? We don't have a lot of kitties in residence right now, but Freddie is over here. Freddie is sleeping in his bed. Dee Dee is up over there. Oh, there's Dee Dee.
You know all the names.
And this is Naina over here.
So they have, well, that family as well, there is a dog somewhere in the park.
So so the cat is staying in the cattery and the dog is staying in the dog park.
Okay, dog got a little bit better facilities, better attention, more attention.
Well, cats prefer to be in a safe space. Cats like to be feeling that they're safe. They don't want to be disturbed. They don't want to be, we don't want to put the cats in the dog park.
Yeah.
So this for cats is heaven. They can chill, they can relax, they can recline. And often when you take a cat out of its home environment, it can be quite stressful for them. So when they come in here, it's a very quiet space. It's a very nice space for them. And we have a full-time cat handler that spends their whole day with the cats, making sure that they're okay.
Yeah, well, what I was saying, that I think it's also a big opportunity for you guys to tap in this kind of providing a knowledge to no commitment, knowledge, we're sharing, we're talking about,
Yeah.
And of course, then it will be so.
I think you're right. And I think that's always, I've always found that's helped along by this inclination to want to share.
Yeah.
And, what I said to you earlier, that it's just a shame more of the owners don't seem to be interested in doing that.
But
maybe they will eventually. We just keep pushing for it. Because it's a healthy dynamic. This is a village. It's not like we're doing this in the UK and we've got somebody in Scotland and somebody in London and somebody in Yorkshire. This is a small place. Might have a lot of dogs.
Yeah.
But it's a small place. We ought to be able to collaborate.
But maybe that's lack of education from the owners. They like, well, I need to protect.
Yeah.
I need to isolate. No troubles.
And I think I'm going to be quite arrogant here and say a little bit of fear.
Fear, yeah.
I think they might think that they've got a bit more to lose when in actual fact they haven't. In no interest in, like I said, there's a dog facility on every street corner now, but still not enough to meet the requirements of dogs. We've got waiting list as long as our arms. Mm. And it's a worry.
Yeah. Do you have any stats? Let's say,
no.
How many dogs we do have?
Do you know what? You would think that there would be now. There wasn't 8 years ago, but with the microchipping, one would imagine that there are at least some government stats.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be mandatory to have your dog microchipped, but a lot of dogs we come across, abandoned ones,
yeah,
like we showed you one today that we're rehoming, have no chips, no record, nothing.
So it's hard to track.
So it is hard. And for that reason, we don't have empirical data.
I did myself before this episode, ChatGPT and Google Bard AI research.
Ah.
It was saying that it's around 1 million dogs in UAE with 500,000 owners.
Okay.
Again.
I'd be interested to know how they got that number, because
yeah,
it's quite considerably more than we would guess.
More than 1 million dogs.
No, I think less than that.
Yeah.
We would have guessed it would be... But again, the difficulty in making a commitment to a specific number is just this whole idea of the dogs that aren't microchipped.
Yeah.
And the desert dogs that are, a little bit feral. The shelters do a remarkable job in Dubai, but they can't cope. Unfortunately, it's a sort of cultural thing, I think. Over the years, it's been such a transitional place that people have come and gone, and therefore dogs have come and gone.
Yeah.
The big problem for the dog community is that a lot of people come and go and leave the dogs.
Leave their dogs, yeah.
And that's a wretched dynamic to have to deal with when you are, dog lovers, which is kind of why we're here. So I think there's all those to be taken into account as well. So it may be a number, that's bigger than we imagine. But, if it's half that number, if it's 500,000 dogs, there's still no way that only a fraction of those could be accommodated in the doggy daycare and schools and boarding facilities that exist.
So it's still not enough facilities?
No. And it can only get worse, I think, as more people come. We are looking at opening a third facility as soon as we can. We've selected the building.
In Dubai?
Yeah, in Dubai, close to here. That will be for small dogs only. We need to be more specifically and deliberately meeting the requirements of the small dog community. So that's what it will be. It will be Little Gems by My Second Home. Yeah. So we'll keep the brand, obviously, but we will focus on these rather small dogs that have rather specialist requirements.
Okay. So since you start talking about the growth or scaling, I was as well doing research. So what I found out, three elements that helps the market grow. So there was like population is growing in UAE, that's for sure. Then I found one really interesting term, humanization, dog humanization. So then when, what you, okay, can you tell me more about what was this term?
It's a very big driver of how the way in which dogs are being catered for is changing globally. We've the Americans to thank for it. It first emerged shortly after the acquisition of a very large group of doggy daycares in the States called Camp Bow Wow, they were called. And with that came this awareness that more than ever before, dogs flourished far more when they were integrated more into the family unit.
Family, yeah.
And integrating them into the family unit, many people might think everybody does that anyway, but they don't. And this trend towards humanizing your pet, effectively treating it like a member of the family, has swept the world. And it's really been one of the major reasons why so much time and effort is now put into creating home-from-home environments. And 8 years ago was a big reason why we decided to do this.
So it's good for the industry, good for the business, good for people who care about it.
Yeah, it can't be a bad thing for people to care more about how their dog, what their dog experiences when it's away from home. You know, dogs can't talk. Many owners think their dog can, and they communicate in their own way, often very clearly. But dogs can't talk. You know, a dog could come to...
Like they're doing now?
The Huskies are always chatting to each other.
Okay.
And Sean, I think, is fluent in Husky, so he will have a pretty good idea of what they're saying. I'm afraid I'm not quite so familiar.
Yeah, you don't know that many languages.
So, but, you know, they can't tell you what sort of a day they've had at school. They can't tell you what it was like to be in the boarding facility while you were away for 2 or 3 weeks or longer, bearing in mind that the Dubai model is, you know, is predicated on people disappearing for large swathes of the school holiday. All they know, all the owners know is when they come back, the dog's delighted to see them.
Yeah.
So it could have had an awful time. And it would be delighted to see
still
them.
Still, dog will be happy.
And it could have had a great time, and the dog would be delighted to see them. So, you know, the fact that we go to such great lengths to make sure that it is a true home-from-home experience is the product of our passion for dogs. And you know, we have to take into account the fact that all of these niche requirements have to be met every minute of the day that and the night that they're with them, that they're with us.
You mentioned you guys started 8 years ago.
8 years ago, almost to the day, with this flagship Dubai Investment Park facility. Mm. By accident, actually, I was walking our beloved and late Labradoodle in the desert, and I bumped into a lovely guy called Sanjeev, who was doing the same. And we got chatting about just how poor the facilities are in Dubai for dogs in terms of off-leash exercise.
Okay.
And they really still are. We carried on with the dialogue and clearly had some common interests. And both came from a media background and a sales background. So we decided to do something about it. He'd already met and was being helped by an amazing animal behaviorist called Vaughan. And between us, we formed My Second Home. We knew what we wanted to do. We knew we needed, it's Dubai, so we knew we needed to go large.
Yeah.
And if you can't build the widest, deepest, longest, don't do it.
Biggest.
So we found the biggest indoor dog park just outside in Nevada, just outside Vegas, I think. And it wasn't hard to figure out how big it was, so we just made ours slightly bigger.
You guys went over there?
No, we did a lot of desk research, some good old-fashioned police work, found out enough about it to know how big ours needed to be. Mm-hmm. And made sure we made it a bit bigger. And so it was 2-2 in terms of the animal guys and the non-animal guys.
Okay, yeah.
So that evened it out a little bit. And between the four of us, Sean joined us, I think, 10 or 11 months after we opened. And between the four of us, we then went on to build the My Second Home that we have today and begin that process of figuring out what we should do to try and replicate it, as I mentioned earlier.
This is like from zero knowledge, zero experience to the world, not UAE, world's largest dog park.
It's been an interesting journey, Evan.
Yeah. Quick recap, like challenges, interesting.
We've been on a journey in which, we've made no mistakes at all. Said no one ever. We've probably made, I'd say all the mistakes it's possible to make in trying to run a very high-end dog hotel. We've had all of the naysaying Nellies out there saying, it's too expensive, it's too big, it's this, it's that. But we had a plan. We knew what we wanted to try and achieve. The four of us actually sat down and said, let's fast forward 7 years and pretend we're sitting here then. And we've got the business that we dream of. What will it look like and what will we do to get from the point we were at then to the point? And I think I would say that we've taken a few little detours, but by and large, we've ended up fulfilling our dreams. Yeah. And you know what? If you get an opportunity once in a lifetime to try and indulge a passion, to grow a business and end up with it looking, feeling, performing, being perceived and widely reported as the business you set out to develop, it's not a bad gig. And I've always been mindful of the fact that doing it once is hard.
Yeah.
Doing it twice often ends up with two mediocre businesses, each of which failing to maximize their potential. Mm. You simply dilute your expertise, your energy, your passion. So we, with a degree of trepidation, decided to embark upon a second facility. It was driven by our members saying to us, we need something a bit further towards the main parts of Dubai. So we opened Al Khuz using this model. It's about half the size of this. But notwithstanding the size, every single aspect of the way it operates and its passion for the welfare of animals and the enrichment and socialization of dogs is identical. And no one could be more proud or delighted than us to have seen it become full in the space of 12 months.
Oh, okay.
And that's a whole other dynamic to being in business. You know, you do what you think you're doing, the best you can do. You want to be the best version of yourself. You want to recruit the very best people and motivate them to become the best versions of themselves. And we've invested heavily in some amazing people. But what you end up with, if you're not careful, is an inability to meet the demand that you've created. And that is a bit of a worry. And it's probably that has prompted us to say, look, we did it once. We did it twice.
It works.
It works. We need to do it a third time.
I want to circle it back. So 7 years ago, you started with the world's largest park. Let's say, talk about the finances. How did you guys start that?
We were very fortunate that we had three of the most essential ingredients among this weird, eclectic group of three guys that found each other by accident.
Yeah.
We had my background and experience in communication, building brands, all of the fluffy stuff, as they keep telling me. But the stuff that gets quite expensive when you're launching a brand and putting a brand new concept on the map. And we had it in-house.
Yeah.
The second thing that we had was crucial, was we had an expert in animals with us, Vaughan. You know, Sanjeev and I, had we been the two musketeers, would have had to find that expertise from somewhere else. We would have had to go out for it and pay a lot of money for it, particularly a lot of money for it at Vaughan's level. So we had that in-house. And the third ingredient was Sanjeev. He was rich. Not as rich, more rich then than he is now, of course, But because we're continuing to invest in the infrastructure here, and we've always had a philosophy that that requires us to plow a large, large chunk of our profits back into just doing things better and bigger, new facilities take. We haven't had to go out of house for any funding,
okay.
Which is a very unusual dynamic for any business starting up. It created stress points that perhaps you don't get when you go out and just borrow a big chunk of money or get a load of investors to take a punt.
Mm-hmm.
It brought with it, you know, a lot of stress for Sanjiv particularly. Well, all of us.
Yeah.
We all invested, but we invested privately rather than by seeking public support. And but, you know, Sanjiv had reached the point in his career where he had some financial independence and an appetite for investment. Vaughan, you know, and I less so, but we understood we needed some skin in the game. So we, you know, gave the piggy bank a good hard bash.
Yeah.
But most importantly, we had the expertise that would have, I think, made it very, very difficult for us to do it at the level that we've done it. And I suspect that one or two of the others that have sadly not survived have not survived because they weren't sufficiently well capitalized. And God, we had them. And just when we thought we'd got it nailed, people have to go around wearing masks and stay indoors the whole time. And let me tell you, when that happens, nobody goes on holiday. And if nobody goes on holiday, dogs don't come to boarding.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been a tough old ride, but it's a very, very important question, and I'm glad you asked it, because I think it's been one of the main reasons why that mix of people, and then, of course, when you add the cream on the top, we get the very best guy from Atlantis in terms of animal behavior and understanding.
Talking about Sean.
Sean. You know, when you get somebody like that, you know, they come along once in a career. And when Vaughan said, I've found the guy that we need to take us forward as a general manager, I'm going to say you can't fail.
Yeah.
If I can find some wood, but you can't.
All right.
You know?
So the lesson is three right partners coming together at the right time with the
finding passion. An amazing fourth musketeer very soon after opening. Was fundamental. And then I think something you picked up on earlier, having a plan and sticking to it, very important. And having some confidence. You know, what we might lack in, or what we did once lack in experience and expertise, we made up for in an unshakable self-belief.
I want to own a dog, have a dog in my family. What do I need to prepare financially and time-wise? Your opinion.
So you've got a dog. And it's a puppy. And it's at that cool stage in life where it's just a bundle of laughs. We're going to assume that the dog doesn't require routine monthly veterinary attention. But for a young dog, it needs regular MOTs like your car. And there may be times when it does what a dog does. It eats stuff that it shouldn't eat and needs some vet attention. So we're going to assume that it really needs to spend some time having some medical attention, you know, a few times a year. That's not unusual for a dog. And if you bought a retriever, it could be a few times a week. You're then going to want it to come into doggy daycare for socialization. Let's say a couple of days a week. You would prefer not to have to keep bringing it and picking it up. So you'd like one of our 14 vans to come and pick it up and drop it off at the end of the day. You're going to go away on holiday. And by God, you're in Dubai for one good reason. You're going for a long holiday.
Yeah.
So you're away for the summer. And you've decided that enough's enough with the curtains. You know, we're going to stop having them destroyed. So you need it to spend time with one of our trainers.
Right.
So if you put all that into a melting pot, you're probably looking at about 1,000 dirhams a month just for routine maintenance. And you might find that even that gets stretched quite a bit if there are isolated spikes of requirement. But I think what I'm saying is you're entering into a contract with an animal, and that animal has an expectation.
Yeah.
And that animal's expectation is that you're going to care for it, you're going to nurture it, and when you're not around and it's not at home, it's going to feel like it's at home. So, you know, it's a significant undertaking. And I just wish everybody that gets a dog asks themselves the question that you've just asked me. Because if more people did, they would go into it with eyes wide open and there'd be fewer surprises.
Yeah, so $1,000 a month need to be planned.
Yeah.
And then maybe it's just up from that point.
It only goes one way.
Yeah. So we spoke about the past, the future, the opening. Any other plans? You're looking for investments, more facilities?
So I think the answer to your question is we have considered bringing in some external investment for a faster rollout, perhaps beyond the third one. I think we're going to, in fact, I know that we're going to fund this third one ourselves again. And that makes more sense to us. One of the things that I'm very excited by when we've got three facilities is the prospect of franchising the model.
Yeah.
Okay. So that we can bring in people who are as passionate as we are and as have as much energy as we have to replicate our formula using our brand. I think this is a really hard business to get right. People just think, well, just find a bit of space and say you're open for dogs. You know, you've seen from the tour, there's a lot of moving parts to this business, and getting it right every day is very hard. But I think there probably are enough people with the ability and experience to do it right enough, with our comfort blanket around them. But I don't feel that franchising model would be viable until we've proved we can do it three times.
Yeah.
Number one, we have waiting lists here. And that's a bit of a worry for us, believe it or not. You know, we love being full. We're not running a charity, it's a business. There is massive opportunity for more people to get into this sector and offer, you know, a better opportunity for the owners of dogs in Dubai.
So if somebody would come now and say to you, Paul, it looks nice, you opened the three facilities, it works, everybody talking about you, we want to open whatever in the other region. What would be, let's say, a cost to build something like this, that big? Just numbers.
I'm not dodging the question. I think there are a couple of, whatever answer I give you, it's got to come with a bit of a health warning, because exactly. There are so many variables. There are geopolitical variables. It depends where you do it. There are huge, and it was remiss of me not to mention this earlier. There are huge cost of personnel issues. You know, this is a culture where employment costs are a lot less than they are in other parts of the world, which is another limitation to exporting it.
Mm-hmm.
But finding the buildings here is getting harder and harder. You want to try, if we wanted to open another of these facilities in, say, Al Quds area, very hard to find the facility of the sort of size that we would need. So you've got your costs of acquisition, if you're going to rent the building, you've got significant fit-out costs. You've got, you know, the best part of a year of working capital. You've got to be manning it up. You have got to be ready to rock and roll and have a year's cash in the bank.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've always got time when you've got to roll on. We're in probably quite an interesting position when we open our small dog facility. Because from a purely marketing point of view, you know, we've got a lot of small dogs here who may be interested in taking their small dog to our small dog facility. So we'll be backfilling them here with bigger dogs.
Yeah.
So the marketing machine will never stop. But if you haven't got access to unencumbered $10 million dirhams of capital, I think you would be very foolish to embark on doing something the way it needs to be done.
Yeah. Well, money is not, it's only a small part.
It is. But, you know, again, you know, you're raising some very valid points here, and it's important to know that it doesn't come cheap.
People are families spending money on their dogs. Like, what are the categories? Maybe you can mention some.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Crazy ones, or like...
Yes, of course, that's it. I've been blown away over the 8 years by the way in which money can sometimes be no object. We haven't time to tell you them all. I suppose without any sort of...
Give me one crazy one.
Well, we have cameras in every room, in every bedroom, hotel room. And the reason why we've got that is because when you go away on holiday, most owners like to see what their dog's doing. Now, obviously, there is no verbal interaction because that would just be unsettling. But we do have a lot of owners who are very specific about how they want the dog to be treated in this home-from-home environment. And I would say to you one example is that we had a dog once that had a pink blanket for the first half of the week and a blue blanket at weekends. And we just kind of got it a little bit wrong one night. And so the phone call came in, it's Wednesday, the blanket should be blue. And we trotted along and changed the blanket from blue to pink.
Yeah.
Not long after we'd opened, somebody came in and said, we love it, but our four dogs are very special. And we said, of course they are. And he said, and we still have never been on holiday since we got them because we don't think that even what you've done here is a true home from home environment. He said, it can't be when you think about it because they exist in an environment that you can't possibly replicate here. You can replicate the attention that they get. But, you know, if only you had a room which looked like the room they lived in at home. And I remember saying, we can. And we had a spare room. It's now the kitchen. This was very early days. And we took photographs of the lounge at home. And at immense expense, we replicated the lounge at home. And the dogs came to us for getting on for half the year. The guy had to travel, meant to travel, and suddenly got the travel bug. Because all of a sudden, he could look
now
at his camera.
Can travel.
And he could see that the dogs were still in the lounge, even though they were in their home away from home lounge. So, you know, two ends, not really two ends of the spectrum, the same spectrum. But I suppose, tongue in cheek, but I suppose it's just symptomatic. And here we go again, going back to humanization. It's just symptomatic of where the market is going.
Yeah.
If you cannot create a true home from home experience for these dogs, don't do this. Don't do it. They don't just need a room where they can run and pee and poo on each other. They don't want that anymore. We thought, well, this has got disaster written all over it. But again, we applied the principles, we applied the procedures, we applied the processes.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And we've been doing it now for 3 years. We do it towards the end of the year. We have a series of 5 or 6 weekends when we invite members and their dogs to come and play in the snow. It's heavily managed and regulated. We have an army of people making sure that the snow remains white instead of yellow or brown, which was clearly one of the criteria that Ski Dubai set. But, you know, that is a big gamble on their part. And it would be a big gamble for the government to say, have a bit of beach. But dare I say it, there are footprints in the snow now. You know, it's been done.
Yeah.
We've proved that the model can work. And for us, that would be the next most exciting thing for us to do. Because once again, there probably aren't many places in the world where your dog can play on the beach in the morning, in the snow in the afternoon, and then at a huge indoor dog park in the evening.
And you live in Dubai.
Unless you're in Dubai, you've got your stuff, don't you?
Yeah, sounds good. For wrapping up, do you know how much is a penalty if the dog will do poo in the park and the owner not going to pick it up?
We're launching an outreach program, which is going to give us an opportunity to take our passion for dogs into some of the major dog owning communities. It's a big deal, and we want to possibly get our third facility open first. And I mention that only because to research it, I've spent a lot of time in a lot of communities. And every community seems to believe it needs to set its own rules. So the answer to your question is, I've seen signs on lampposts warning of fines of 200 dirhams. I've seen signs warning of 2,000 dirhams. So I think it's just wherever you happen to be unlucky to actually commit the felony. And I think, you know, dogs wee and poo. It's what the owners do about it that really marks the difference between an acceptable dog-friendly environment and one that's hazardous to people and unacceptable to non-dog owners.
Yeah.
So you've got to remember, there's a lot of people who don't like dogs. And we are in a part of the world where, you know, when I'm elsewhere in the world at conferences or exhibitions or events talking about my second home and dog humanization, you know, they say, so hang on, let me get this right. You've chosen to open the world's biggest indoor dog park, this massive facility with hundreds of dogs in Dubai?
The largest one.
Doesn't everybody hate dogs in Dubai? Some people think they eat them here.
Yeah.
But you know, everybody, nobody can get, The reality is that Dubai is incredibly dog friendly. Now, there's a large expat community that drives that affection for dogs, but it is, by and large, a very, very dog friendly environment. And if it wasn't, we wouldn't have an army, you know, 150 incredible young men and women from almost the four corners of the world. The one thing I can say for them all is wherever they've come from, they love dogs. Well, at least they do now. They may not have arrived with as deeper passion for them as they have now, but they have. And Dubai is a dog-loving part of the world. No question about it.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily how it's perceived elsewhere in the world.
Exactly. So the correct answer from my Google research set by government 2016 is 200 dirhams.
200? Okay, 200 that was dirhams, my starting point.
And they're going to force you to sign that you're not going to repeat that again, felony.
Yeah.
And if they're going to catch you again, it will be 400 dirhams and they're going to take a dog, I don't know, for some time.
This is, however, I'm pleased I passed the test because that was my starting point.
Yeah, that was good, yeah.
However, right. This is a part of the world where policing is reactive. Policing on the road is quite reactive compared with, say, the UK, where it's very, very much more proactive. And the way in which I think that felony is going to be policed is probably going to be quite reactive. My view, for what it's worth, is that I can't conceive why somebody would not pick up after their dog. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. And I'd put an extra zero on that number.
Yeah.
If they asked me what I thought the fine should be.
At least to start with, until we're going to sort it out.
Yeah. Hmm.
Last thing, it's interesting what you said, because Sean mentioned the same. Dog training, it's not actual dog training, it's actually the owner. We need to teach and educate the owner.
Which, interestingly, I know we're wrapping up now, but interestingly, it's not a bad way of returning to one of the first things that I was ever told by Vaughan, which is, you can train the dogs, but until you've trained the owners, it's not going to embed the behavior that you want.
Well, the industry is growing. Perspective is changing. Humanization is happening for the dogs, which is good for the industry, for the business, and just for all ecosystem. Do you feel this is a job or this is pure joy and happiness?
I have always thought that if I could reach a stage in life where... And I've had an amazing life. I've been very privileged as a young man, as a crime reporter, a news reporter. I've traveled the world for 2.5 decades interviewing popes and presidents and serial killers. And I've been around. And I always thought that if I could reach a stage, as I say, where I could do something that I was passionate about, that also turned into a successful business, that employed amazing people, and in an environment where we could encourage them to be as good as they could be, then I'd have nailed it. And it's eluded me for 50 odd years. But 8 years ago, I nailed it. I found something that, although I may not, in the interests of full disclosure, have known it at the time, I've since learned I've found something that can be a business, but can also be a deep, deep, deep passion.
Mm.
And I couldn't hope to be in a better place with better people doing a better thing.
Sounds good. Congratulations. And thanks for sharing with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for welcoming us.
It's been great having you.
Nice chatting with you.
Right.
Yeah, lovely.
Good.
All right, wrapping up episode number 13. Super happy about the team, about our producer. She's managing now to put more and more episodes in the schedule. So yeah, shout out to our team. They always kind of behind the cameras. They are not getting attention, but want to say thank you to them. Have a motion team, always with the cameras, always working hard. Then big process in editing. So guys, if you need anything from the video production services, please approach Evomotion team. They are the best in the game. And I'm speaking nice about this because I'm managing that team. So get in touch. Get in touch and work with us. Apart from that, again, another great episode. It's so nice that these episodes brings me into the business. I can explore new markets, new trends, and share with you guys, share with you knowledge, share with you trends, and I'm looking forward to do that more. If you have any recommendations how we should improve or what else we should interview, what other facilities we should visit that you think you can benefit as a viewer, please do let us know, and for sure we're gonna do that. And to wrap it up this episode, I think the main keyword of this episode is humanization. That's for sure. I learned, and it looks like all arrows pointing to it. There is a trend. The humanization is happening for the dogs. People spending more money demand. It means a bigger and better and more facilities popping up to cater that. So yeah, that's my key takeaway from this episode. And I'm looking forward for the next one. Thanks for the team from my second home. And yeah, see you next time.